is Stryker Spine v. Biederman. Mr. Metlick?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Your Honors, the issues presented on this appeal require the Court to consider de novo the question of whether claims to one invention are patently distinct from claims to another, and in this particular instance to determine whether one set of claims is non-obvious in view of the other. Now, the issue here, of course, arises in the context of a patent interference, the purpose of which is to determine which, if either party, is entitled to a patent on the inventions in question. But here, if the decision of the Board of the District Court stands, and the single interference count that has been declared here, which in Stryker's view combines two patently distinct inventions, the consequence will be not only that Biederman will prevail in the appeal and obtain claims to an invention known as the intersecting bores invention, which Biederman demonstrably never made and never disclosed, but Stryker's claims in its 460 patent to that invention will be lost to Stryker forever.
Doesn't figure show both the claims in one device?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Doesn't figure 7 show both claims in one device?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that, of course, in our view, as of the Carbone invention date, is Carbone's invention to put them together. Obviousness in this instance, with Biederman as the senior party, should be determined as according to conventional principles of obviousness. What would one of ordinary skill in the art, as of the invention date of Biederman, who claims this invention as its own, be as of November 2000?
Both Dr. Faree and Dr. Antonsen agree that these are obvious in light of each other.
Not at all, Your Honor.
In fact, the court looked at Claim 1 of your patent, which relates to what, intersecting axes, and Claim 18, which relates to intersecting planes, and looked at a two-way analysis even, and said one is obvious over the other and the other is obvious over one, based on testimony which she credited.
In this instance, Your Honor, the characterization of Dr. Faree as having admitted on cross-examination and at his deposition that Claim 1, the intersecting bores, is obvious in view of Claim 18, we contend is not a fair reading of his testimony. At most, speaking of the obvious embodiments testimony.
But we don't have the witnesses here. The judge heard the witnesses and made a judgment that A is more credible than B.
But, Your Honor, we are dealing there with, at most, opinion testimony of experts. If we look at the objective evidence in the record as to what's obvious as of November 2000, and then later go to the purported admissions of the experts, and we contend that to the extent the judge made a finding of fact about what is obvious and what is not, that's obviousness is a question of law.
Based on underlying facts.
But here, what are the facts? The facts, the most pertinent, probative facts of what was obvious to those skilled in the art in November 2000, as to whether one skilled in the art in November 2000 faced with nothing but intersecting planes would have considered it obvious to modify that structure to create the second of the at least one bore. And no one disputes the fact that the language is susceptible to either one bore or a second bore. The question for obviousness here is, would it be obvious to orient the second bore faced with just the intersecting planes at an angle?
But didn't Dr. Faree say it would have been obvious for anyone to just snip off a corner and change the seat, the angle of the seat, and thus arrive at both intersecting planes and intersecting axes?
That, Your Honor, would speak to the obviousness of Claim 18 over Claim 1. And Dr. Faree didn't quite say it would be obvious to do that. He said that you might do that. He also suggested, if you look at how Biederman did it, you could trim material from the inside and then you wouldn't simply cut it off. Your Honor, I think it's important to understand that we're dealing not with pieces of wood. We're not hanging drywall here. We're talking about very, very complex devices, prosthetic devices that are going to be implanted in the cervical region of the spine. The suggestion, and this is the linchpin of the entire obviousness argument going from Claim 18 to Claim 1, is that it would be conventional to drill a second bore normal to the plane of the second plane. But here, there is no evidence that one skilled in the art in November 2000 would have done that. Biedemann approached this exact problem from several different directions.
But didn't both witnesses, both experts, say in effect that that's what would have been obvious, that would be the normal, natural thing, that if you're going to drill a bore, that you would drill a bore perpendicular to the plane of the end of the item?
I would suggest, Your Honor, respectfully, that Dr. Faree, to the extent he gave testimony on cross-examination that has been characterized as an admission. In the abstract, Dr. Faree was talking about, sure, if you have a planar surface, the normal way to do it might be to drill normal to that surface. But he was talking in the abstract. Again, we're not hanging drywall. He made it very clear in his testimony that in the context, and only Dr. Faree of the two experts was qualified to testify about pedicle screws and these types of devices. He said, no, it would not be obvious. Even if we look at the cross-examination itself, if read in context, if we go back to the morning of August 25th, which is a couple of pages before the testimony that is quoted where Dr. Faree purportedly admitted that it would be obvious to drill the second bore at an angle, Dr. Faree said the obvious thing to him to do would be go back to the prior art screw, drill the second bore, have it collinear, which is what the Biedemann inventors did. The most probative evidence, again, we contend, is the Biedemann inventors themselves, people who can be considered at least of ordinary, if not extraordinary, skill in the art, faced with the identical problem, did not find that solution. Now that, although this arises in the context of patentable distinction of one over the other, it's the identical principle to that which this court has applied time and time again as evidence of non-obviousness. In fact,
I know you disagree with the district court's conclusion on obviousness, but are there underlying findings of fact that you contend are clearly erroneous?
There aren't actually that many, Your Honor, and many findings of fact altogether. One finding of fact which we agree with.
Is there any one that you disagree with? Any one that you contend is clearly erroneous?
If it's considered a finding of fact, which I don't think it is, that the conventional way to drill a bore is normal to the plane of a surface in the context of a pedicle screw, which again, we're talking about the size of a hairpin, and we're talking about carefully crafting the head of that screw, which is maybe the size of a Tic Tac, then we would contend that is clearly erroneous. And there is cross-examination of Dr. Antonsen that supports that. Even in one of the preferred embodiments of Carbone, where the contention is that Carbone drills the second bore normal to the plane, that's not how the device is created. It's very carefully crafted, and there is testimony from Dr. Antonsen, frankly, which can be found in the record at JA 2783 through 85, where he acknowledges that even in one of the Carbone preferred embodiments, you could have intersecting planes, yet your intersecting bores, the second bore is not normal to the second plane. It is at an angle, which suggests that there is a distinction drawn between the plane and the bore. This isn't a simple matter of let's take a billet of metal and just drill where we want to. Biedemann certainly didn't do that. And again, Biedemann has three illustrated embodiments to approach this problem. Everyone sacrifices the integrity of the coupling. It is not because either they take material from the neck of the screw, they cut a notch into the head of the into the coupling element, or they cut off a corner of the coupling element, never changing the orientation of the bore. If it wasn't obvious to the Biedemann inventors as of November 2000, that's the most probative evidence we have here. And frankly, Your Honor, I don't think there's a finding of fact that the judge made. The judge basically reached a conclusion of law that this was obvious based on what it perceived to be, what she perceived to be, admissions by Dr. Faree that just aren't there. Dr. Faree testified that in his opinion, what would be obvious would be to do what the Biederman inventors did. Drill the second bore if there's going to be a second bore. Drill it concentrically. There is no hard evidence to the contrary. Now, this failure of the Biederman inventors to do this is something that should not be lost on the defendants here and their counsel. They prevailed in DePue versus Medtronics, Your Honor, before this court, in establishing non-obviousness, ironically, of a pedicle screw invention because the defendant in that case had failed to come up with the same solution. Now, the posture of the case may be different, but the principle is identical. The single most probative evidence here, as of November 2000, as to what would be obvious to one skilled in the art, is the failure of the Biederman inventors to do this. And again, the linchpin of the argument, the only basis at the end of the day upon which the district court found it was obvious, was testimony from Dr. Anderson that in the abstract, the obvious way to drill a bore is at an angle. The Biederman inventors didn't do it. There's a preferred embodiment in Carbone, which really shows that in the context of these devices, it is independent where you drill the bore from how you cut the plane. One does not relate to the other. These are complex devices. They go through a tremendous amount of engineering. The Carbone invention, by virtue of the way it is accomplished, is the only device in this record that doesn't sacrifice the integrity of the coupling element, which could be devastating during surgery if that screw head comes out or breaks or anything of that sort. You get a lower profile. You get increased angulation where there is absolutely no contemplation anywhere in the Biederman application of the possibility even of increased angulation.
Do you want to save your rebuttal time, Mr.
Yes, Lampen? I do, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Dauchot.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Luke Dauchot. I am here on behalf of Biederman Motec, and the co-defendant joins us in this closing argument. Your Honors, the issue, the straightforward issue here is whether or not Stryker met its burden of proving that intersecting axes and intersecting planes are patently distinct. As Your Honors, as the panel pointed out, the district court judge, after holding an evidentiary hearing, a bench trial, concluded that Stryker had not met its burden. It wasn't addressed on oral argument, but I did notice in the briefs a whole lot of time being spent in Stryker's brief on this written description issue. Written description was not before the court in this trial. The written description issue was a contingent issue and has been from the get-go, including even in front of the board. So the written description issue was an issue that would be reached if and only if there was a determination that, in fact, count one, the interference count declared, did include two patently distinct inventions. I do want to respond briefly on this notion that Mr. Biederman, that Lutz Biederman tried and failed to come up with an intersecting axes invention. I mean, that issue, that's not in evidence. I mean, there's zero evidence. That's pure lawyer argument. The closest the issue came is whether or not a model that Dr. Farid created did in fact contain intersecting axes or not, a model that Dr. Farid contended was as Figure 3 in the Biederman application. That's as close as it came. So this notion that Mr. Biederman tried and failed is just utterly without support. Let me shift on to the obviousness issue. As an initial proposition, we believe Stryker, you know, did not meet its burden right out of the gate in two respects. One, Dr. Farid, in considering whether or not, in opining that there were in fact two patently distinct inventions in count one, considered one item of prior art and only one out of prior art, as opposed to the entire body of prior art, which he was required to do.
But the fact remains that Biederman didn't disclose intersecting bores. Axes.
We disagree with that, Your Honor. We do believe that intersecting axes or bores, I'm sorry, is in fact disclosed in the Biederman
application. Not to suggest that the argument is a bore, but we're talking about the disclosure.
But, Your Honor, the intersecting bores, it is our position, is in fact disclosed in the application and is in fact disclosed in Figure 3. But more to the point, that issue is a written description, is a question of fact, and that issue was never reached by the district court, as agreed by Stryker. It took the position that that's an issue the district court did not have to reach, with if it concluded that, in fact, count one did not include patently distinct inventions. But moving to the obviousness issue, so out of the gate, Dr. Faree considered only the single embodiment or the single item of prior art. And point number two, in opining that the intersecting bores and intersecting planes were patently distinct, Dr. Faree did exactly what Mr. Bush did in front of the board. That was their expert at that point. And what he did was he simply focused on the fact that count one and count 18, or claim one and claim 18, so the intersecting bores and the intersecting planes, were different. Well, that's an anticipation issue, and anticipation isn't in question here. We're dealing with obviousness. The second thing that Dr. Faree pointed out...
Well, but you've got anticipation differences that are not resolved over a long period of time. Does that tend towards a finding of non-obviousness?
Well, no, because I think from an anticipation standpoint, as you pointed out, Chief Judge Rader, we have Figure 7 in Carbone. That, in fact, includes both. And although this wasn't tried, it wasn't part of the trial record, we do have Figure 3 in Biederman, which we maintain does, in fact, include both as well. Now, from a so in the anticipation issue, Judge Rader, we strictly focus on the language of Claim 18 and the language of Claim 1. So if you read the language of Claim 18, expressly speaking, you don't see a reference to axes or bores that intersect. So that's the point. The other point Dr. Faree made was the fact that these things have advantages, that if you have intersecting bores, you have a certain set of advantages that you might not get with intersecting planes and vice versa. Well, that doesn't go to the issue of obviousness. And so the same evidentiary gaps that the board took Stryker to task for are evident in this record. There was simply no explanation as to why these two things were obvious.
Mr. Mentlich argues that if there were any findings of fact underlying the conclusion of obviousness drawn by the district court, those findings of fact simply were out of context, generic statements that the most common way to for a bore to end would be a plane perpendicular to the axis. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I have two reactions to that, Your Honor. First of all, if we look at the trial record and we see what Dr. Faree, first of all, the issue at trial were these medical devices. I mean, it's not as if we were trying a case in the abstract. So everybody was on the same page as to what was at issue. And everybody was on the same page as to who a person of ordinary skill in the art was. And so the question put to Dr. Faree at trial, page 103, Joint Appendix 2713, was as follows. As of November 2000, the ordinary skilled artisan in the relevant art here would have understood that the standard way to end a bore is in a plane perpendicular to the axis of the bore. Correct. Answer, I believe they would have viewed that as the most common way. Question, the most common way. Answer, right. Question, an obvious way to end a bore, correct? Answer, an obvious way. So, look, we're talking about a person of ordinary skill in the art here, as the question was put, and we're talking about a person familiar with the invention here. But a second point, Judge Lynn, if you look at the Carbone patent itself, at column 13, Carbone goes through chapter and verse as to how to drill a bore in the metal that's going to be the coupling, into the coupling element. And so right there in the Carbone patent itself, column 13, there's an explanation about how to drill a bore, which is exactly consistent.
What line are you referring to?
I am referring to the Carbone patent, column 13, Judge Lynn.
No, I'm at column 13. What line?
We begin with line 13 with reference to figures 28A and 28B, beginning with showing a metal blank used to make a coupling element. And then so there's an initial discussion, and if you drop down about the first bore, and a second bore. Then there's an additional discussion at line 40, actually 42. The first bore is preferably formed by drilling from the upper end toward the lower end of the coupling element. So it lays it out, and this is completely consistent with the way Dr. Ant.
Where is there anything that says that the normal, natural, preferable way to do it would be normal to the plane?
Oh, I misunderstood your question. There is no, I mean, that was admitted at trial, but I thought the court's question was, is there any suggestion that this way of dealing, of drilling a bore, does apply to these medical devices? That's what I thought the question was. And the answer is, well, yes.
But well, I'm trying to be more specific because the district court's opinion says that Dr. Free agreed that the ordinary skilled artisan would have understood that the most common way for a bore to end would be in a plane perpendicular to the axis of the bore.
That's correct.
And if I understood Mr. Mintley correctly, his argument was that's a nice general statement that might apply to anything, whether you're, you know, repairing a wall in your house or anything else. But what does that have to do with the obviousness or
that's right. And
patentable distinction between these two?
Well,
planes.
2 points. Dr. Antonsen testified as well and was a bit more detailed about that. We'll put Dr. Antonsen's testimony aside. With respect to the Carbone patent, the way, I mean, if you look at Figure 7, and I think that both experts agreed that Figure 7 demonstrates going about drilling a bore conventionally so that you have the longitudinal axis of the bore being normal to the plane. And if you look at column 13 in Carbone, it explains you drill a bore. And it is ultimately with reference to figure 7. So my point being is that this way of drilling bores, that this is something that you just don't drill bores when it comes to medical devices, is, I think, contradicted by the Carbone patent itself, which explains how to go about dealing with these bores.
So your argument is that this, whatever statements Dr. Free made were made in the context of these particular devices and therefore has some bearing on this.
Of course, Your Honor. Of course. That's what the trial was about. Now, we go into the factual findings, and I don't know. I mean, the court is obviously very familiar with the record, but Judge, you were right. Judge Lurie, the court did in fact undertake an analysis both ways to test whether or not there was indistinctness in either direction. And after undertaking that analysis, the court concluded that Stryker had failed to meet its burden of proof, and then some, because I think the district court went actually further and found that these things, in fact, were not obvious. She didn't have to go that far, but the court did, given the overwhelming evidence, as Your Honors pointed out, from both experts. So I think, Your Honor, unless the panel has additional questions, I would leave it at that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Mintlick, you have over 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, we come back again to the fundamental question of, is it obvious to change Claim 18 to come up with Claim 1? We need a motivation to make the change. Everyone agrees that Claim 18 says nothing about having intersecting bores. Using the Carbone disclosure against Carbone violates principles that this court has enunciated on numerous occasions. The obviousness has to come from the art, from the state of the art.
But wouldn't one of skill in the art reading Carbone reach conclusions? And isn't that what is the subject of this entire trial?
Again, Your Honor, we think more probative than what Carbone says almost a year after the invention date as of which we should be measuring obviousness should not be used against them. Let's look at what Biederman did. Biederman did not drill conventionally. Figure 2 of what's said to be conventionally. Carbone figure 2 does not drill conventionally. It has non-intersecting planes with intersecting bores. So absent the motivation that comes from the recognition in Carbone that you get these advantages, it's just not there. As far as Stryker meeting its burden of proof, if there were evidence, Your Honor, other prior art that suggested or indicated a motivation to make these changes, certainly we would have had it from Biederman. We were proving a negative in effect. We could have put in hundreds of patents that didn't show the invention. We put in evidence, hard evidence, showing non-obviousness. As far as written description goes, written description per se in the context of written description wasn't adjudicated, but it was found as a fact by the district court that Biederman figure 3 does not show intersecting bores. That was the only figure that was ever argued by Biederman as even purportedly making that disclosure. In their appellate briefs, they make reference to a declaration of their expert, Dr. Anderson, which was not in evidence, and he never testified about it. As far as we're concerned, if there is a finding on this record that is clear, it's that Biederman doesn't have intersecting bores. Didn't disclose it, didn't think of it, until 4 years after his priority date when he copied the Carbone claims. Under those circumstances, we believe, and again, in the context of us establishing one of our indicia of non-obviousness here, namely that intersecting bores can be used independently of intersecting planes, which we don't contend is dispositive, but it is evidence of non-obviousness. We showed Carbone figure 2, which has intersecting bores but no intersecting planes. Biederman figure 3 has intersecting planes but not intersecting bores. So in deciding that issue, we believe the district court clearly did find, contrary to what's being asserted now, that there is no such disclosure. Again, I come back to the consequence of not splitting this count into two demonstrably, patentably distinct inventions is that Biederman can wind up with a patent which we believe will never be enforceable because it lacks written description, but more importantly, Stryker will lose claims to which it is absolutely entitled. To say that Carbone included an embodiment where he drilled what's said to be conventionally, he certainly doesn't describe it as such. In the context of, again, designing these very complex surgical devices to be implanted, they're independent considerations. And again, we've shown that they exist independent of each other. You can have, in a preferred embodiment, intersecting bores, intersecting planes, where the bore isn't normal to the second plane. We have figure 2. You can have intersecting bores without intersecting planes altogether. Again, Your Honor, we contend that if viewed in its entirety, there's no admission of obviousness here by Dr. Faree in any portion of his testimony, and it's not that long, and it's in the record. I would respectfully ask the court to read it all in context and conclude that there is no admission of obviousness here, and that, in fact, the record as a whole demonstrates the non-obviousness of the intersecting bores over intersecting planes. The inventions are patentably distinct. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mentlich. Our next case is Razzo versus the Department of Veterans.